conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Hey, what we're trying to do here is reconnect the eternal with the everyday in ways that honor Jesus. We are seeking to be equipped together to enter into the conversations of the day full of grace and truth, where you and I can, as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ, actually not only have conversations that are genuinely diplomatic and genuinely dignified and accurate and truthful, but also graceful. So I want to lead off with a couple of headlines today. I think this is true every single day, but this weekend seemed to have provided a lot of headline news that is frankly, if you just stop and think about it for even just a moment, really easy to use as an entry point of conversation as a Christian into the conversations of the day. So this would be the headline that I would attach to this particular article, and it's the news out of the Seattle-Tacoma area about Richard Russell, where his family members are obviously what they describe as stunned and heartbroken after the airline worker stole a passenger plane on Friday from SeaTac, the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, and he was killed when he crashed 25 miles away almost an hour later. So when I listened to the statement that was issued by the family, I was really struck by one phrase, and it's a phrase that leaps out in the print editions of the coverage as well. And this is it: Jesus is truly the only one holding this family together. In the context of the family's statement, here's where that phrase appears. This is a complete shock to all of us, the family said in a statement they released Saturday night. We are devastated by these events, and Jesus is truly the only one holding this family together right now. As I heard that, I recognize the gravity of the statement. I also recognize the reality of the statement. I also recognize how that sounds to non-believing people. And I wondered how families who do not have Jesus as their solid rock, people who do not have Jesus as their point of integration, people who do not have Jesus as their chief cornerstone or the Lord of all, how do they hold it all together in such circumstances? The Apostle Paul describes Jesus as scientists who happen to be Christians have described as the very laminin of life. Laminin is apparently this like protein level thing going on in our bodies that, when you look at it in its DNA structure, it actually looks like a cross, and it is that which holds everything together. And so when we describe Jesus as the laminin of life, we're borrowing from Colossians 1:17, where the Apostle Paul is speaking of the preeminence and supremacy of Jesus, and he says that Jesus is before all things, and in him all things hold together. You to think about that for a moment. How in your life is it Jesus who holds all things together? How does Jesus hold you together when you or your family or your job or your dreams or your health or your fill in the blank are falling apart? For me, this is a conversation about the faithful assurance of God's sovereignty and God's goodness, God's providence, God's faithfulness, God's eternal plan to make everything new, to fix everything that's broken, to actually bring not only redemption, but full restoration. I mean, for me, the conversation about how Jesus holds me together when everything in my life is falling apart, or any part of my life is falling apart, for me, that is the substance of reality. I don't know how other people are holding it together without Jesus. And so there are many forces at work today trying to tear people up and tear families apart. And so I want us to lay claim today and then work on behalf of the one who really alone holds all things together. And certainly in the midst of this, we want to be praying for Richard Russell's family as the Lord upholds them and holds them together, even in the midst of this terrible personal family situation that they're facing. And now I want to make a transition to people in California who are actively trying to hold it all together in the midst of a very active fire season. So we're going to actually talk in a few minutes with Pastor Jim Howe. Jim is a pastor in Redding, California. We reached out to him last week in the midst of the car fire, and car fire, C-A-R-R. And he said, hey, can I talk to you next week when, you know, things are frankly, you know, he was hoping that at this point maybe things in the car fire would not be quite as hot as they were last week. And that is true. And so we're going to touch base with him in just a few minutes. But in the midst of that, the so-called holy fire in California has really ramped up. So an article about the holy fire that I pulled up this morning says this: on day six, so this would now be day seven, of the battle against the destructive holy fire, crews gained ground, increasing containment to 41%. Now, as a Christian who continues to pray for firefighters battling the so-called holy fire in California, I gotta say, this is a situation when the news is providing a pretty easy leverage point for conversation for you and I with people in our community. So when you think of holy fire, I want to know what comes to mind. For you and I, as Christians, what may come to mind when we hear the phrase holy fire is the descent of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost. But a lot of people don't know anything about that. What comes to mind for you may be the Spirit's refining work in the life of the believer. What comes to mind for many people is what they've heard about a fiery hell and the wrath of God. So in the church, we sing songs like, you know, send your fire. But we have to remember that we've got an unbelieving world that is hearing that language very differently than the way we're singing it. Yes, fire has a purging effect, and it's rightly fear-producing. But I think that means that we as believers, we got to handle the use of such a word and its power with great care. And so, you know, maybe we want to set aside the singing of Send Your Fire during this season in much the same way that we set aside the Your Love is Like a Hurricane language after a particularly devastating hurricane season the last couple of years. What do our unbelieving neighbors think when they hear the word holy attached to the word fire? What do we mean by the word holy? I mean, we certainly recognize that God is holy, and God defines holiness, but what does that mean? Is God's holiness demonstrated in creation and redemption, or just wrath? So while holiness includes God's absolute moral perfection and therefore reveals sin as that which is contrary to holiness, I want us to think about whether or not God's holiness existed prior to and apart from sin. And if so, what does that mean? If God is eternally holy, even before we are fallen, then God's holiness includes something other than wrath. God is holy before and apart from the reality of sin. So God's holiness must encompass not only moral perfection and goodness, but beauty in all of its truthfulness. Now, who among us fears beauty? So God's holiness might be a cause for fear for those who reject God's ways, but God's holiness is also like a flame to which we, like moths, are drawn, longing to be near him, longing to know him more and more, longing to gaze upon the beauty of his face. Now back to our prayers for those suffering in the holy fire and the car fire, more than a dozen other fires raging in California alone. Let us pray prayers like, Holy God, send refreshing rains, dampen the wind, encourage and protect those on the front lines. Use this in ways we cannot currently imagine to reveal your glory through restoration and new life, and even the preservation of things precious to people. It's in that spirit that we are going to enter into a conversation with Jim Howe. So Jim is a pastor in Redding, California. He actually pastors the First Presbyterian Church of Redding, California. It is a church affiliated with the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, the EPC. I know that that denomination and his local church have set up recovery funds for local recovery there. It's an emergency fund. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about efforts between more than 50 pastors in the region to be sure that people's needs are met, but that there's not a duplication of efforts. We're going to talk about who else is on the ground there, the kinds of things that people need, and how those needs are going to be met. So we're going to have an update from the literal middle of the fiery furnace in America's most populated state next up. Pastor Jim Howe of Redding, California. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Joining me now is Pastor Jim Howe. Pastor Howe serves in Redding, California at the First Presbyterian Church there. He's here today to give us an update on the Carr Fire, C-A-R-R, that we have been following and praying in relationship to as we've been praying the news the last couple of weeks. Jim, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be on the air today.
So we have we've been sharing with folks that your denomination, the EPC, has an emergency fund set up in Redding to aid in local recovery, and we want to talk with you about that. But let's start by just kind of sharing with people where you are and what you've been experiencing.
Well, it's been a very, very difficult time, as you can imagine. More than half of our congregation was evacuated during the fire. Our church, First Press, is located on the hill on the west side of Redding where the fire came. And that Thursday night of the fire, when it began on a Monday, and by Thursday night, it was threatening the city, clear down to downtown. And people were evacuated, lines were long, and my own brother was evacuated and came and stayed with us. We honestly didn't even know if the church would still be there when everything was over. It didn't get anywhere that close. It really was a miraculous and heroic effort that Cal Fire and all the other firefighters put out. Redding Fire Department, DC-10s were coming in and bombing the fire with fire retardant, with massive payloads of fire retardant. And there were a number of homes that were burned. There were fire tornadoes, as you've probably heard. One of our members had a next-door neighbor's roof lifted off their home and put in their backyard, and Mary Jean, who's served on the session here at First Press in the past, she said to her neighbors, you can have your roof back now. So there's been humor in the midst of deep, deep pain and sorrow. And then people began to return home that following Monday and Tuesday. There are still portions affected by the fire where people are still evacuated. It's more on the furthest west end. The fire has grown some to the north and the south. It's now 65% contained. The smoke has been overwhelming. The air has been very unhealthy. So the ongoing realities of the fire are very real. We have two new fires in the local vicinity. One is just on another arm of Lake Shasta. And it's over 3,000 acres already, and it's only 2% contained. And then there's another fire on the other end of 299. And last I heard, it was over 20% contained and about 3,000 acres.
Okay, so can we pause there, and can I ask what from, you know, the very wet southeastern United States is going to sound like a question that everyone should know the answer to, but context really matters. When you talk about a fire being 2% contained or 20% contained or 40% contained or 65% contained, I'm thinking to myself, a fire that's 1% uncontained is scary. So can you kind of help us understand what that language means?
Well, it has to do with the fire line. How much of, if you were to look on a map at the Carr Fire, you would see the acreage that's been burned. And if you were to draw a circle, if it were a perfect circle, if you were to draw a line around it, when we say 65% contained, that means 65% of the fire line is under control of the firefighters.
So the bigger the fire, the more difficult that is, because you're talking about at the physical geography. Like, it gets bigger, and therefore the line around it gets bigger. Well, with that actually, I think, helps people make sense of it. And then there might be one direction in which where they're not particularly worried about the fire burning itself out, and so 65% containment might mean the entire side that we're really concerned about, because it's the side of the quote-unquote circle that is threatening communities.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct. The most important thing was controlling the eastern side of the fire, because it started in a national park at Whiskeytown. A car had a flat tire. A spark from the metal hitting the pavement ignited the grass, and we actually had pretty good rain this spring, but rains and our golden California hills, that means tall grass, and when grass is busted, everything just goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So it spread very quickly.
So I would love for you to share the story of the Providence Ministry, because I know just enough about it to be intrigued. So we have homeless people who are raising fruits and vegetables, and they are now serving newly homeless people, or people made homeless by the fire. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Reading in the past 10 years, with the change in our criminal justice system and a lot of prisoners being released to the streets for less violent crimes, they're given a bus ticket and sent to Reading. So we have approximately 600 homeless people in Reading. Some of them are drug affected, some of them are mentally ill. Bud Hancock, properly known as Robert, he actually worked with the Reagan administration way back in the day. He moved to Reading well over a decade ago, and he had already begun Providence International. They do microloans internationally because of his concern about how grants were used internationally to other countries. He felt it was better to help people individually. So when he came to Reading and saw the need there, the dream was before him that somehow that they'd be able to work with homeless people, re-educate them in the job force, give them a resume and a reference so that they'd be able to re-enter the job force. So they raise vegetables. They've reclaimed some areas around Reading that previously were not being used along the riverfront, right along I-5, planted orchards. It's been a big task, and Bud Hancock is a man with a big vision, and there are a number of people that were formerly homeless that are working for Providence. They raise produce, and the goal is to provide 30 pounds of produce per family that was affected by the fire that over the next 10 weeks just to get them started.
I just love that story. I mean, I think it is one of those stories of not just neighbors helping neighbors, but, you know, sometimes, Jim, those of us who do not perceive ourselves as the Christ in need, but the Christ in a position to help others, we forget that there are times that because of things like a fire, because of things that we can't guard against, really, we cannot adequately guard against, that we might find ourselves on the receiving end or the needing end of those who otherwise we thought we were in a position to help. And I think this is a beautiful story of the gospel all the way around.
Right, right. Yes, it's... And even one of the other positive factors in all of this is that I mentioned to a friend of mine, he's a pastor of a Calvary Chapel here in Reading, Brian Blank. He's at Little Country Church, which is not little, it's a mega church. at our meeting last week, I approached him and I said, well, it's sad to say that it took a fire to bring us together, but at least we're together. Hmm. And we're praying together and looking at the needs of the community together. And that's very, very crucial because the issues that Reading faces, you know, with this homeless problem, one of the issues with the fire was the looting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is related to the same population. That's why one of the reasons why the National Guard had to come in is because they were afraid, and it did happen. Some people evacuated their homes, and while their homes were evacuated, they were looted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that you and I don't run out of time before we tell people how they can help you as you are helping others. Give folks the best place online to help you help your neighbors.
Okay. The primary source of giving right now is through the Evangelical Presbyterian Church website, epc.org, and you go to disaster relief and you go to the section that has been set up for the car fire. That money will go into a fund. Jeff Jeremiah, our stated clerk, has let me know that money will come to First Press and we'll be responsible for sending that money out to families. And what we're doing is we're taking a relational approach. Yeah. And we'll be identifying one family at a time.
Jim, you and I are going to have to you and I are going to have to leave it right there because we have to go to a hard break. Friends, it's epc.org. Go to disaster relief for the car fire. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We'll be right back.